Underword. I had a dream which was not all a dream. The bright sun was extinguished, and the stars did wander darkling in the eternal space, rayless and pathless, and the icy earth swung blind and blackening in the moonless air. Morn came and went, and came and brought no day, and men forgot their passions in the dread. Of this their desolation, and all hearts were chilled into a selfish prayer for light. And they did live by watchfires, and the thrones, the palaces of crowned kings, the huts, the habitations of all things which dwell, were burnt for beacons. Cities were consumed, and men were gathered round their blazing homes to look once more into each other's face. Happy were those who dwelt within the eye of the volcanoes and their mountain torch. A fearful hope was all the world contained. Forests were set on fire, but hour by hour they fell and faded, and the crackling trunks extinguished with a crash, and all was black. The brows of men by the despairing light wore an unearthly aspect, as by fits the flashes fell upon them. Some lay down and hid their eyes and wept, and some did rest their chins upon their clenched hands and smiled, and others hurried to and fro and fed their funeral piles with fuel, and looked up with mad disquietude on the dull sky, the pall of a past world, and then again with curses cast them down upon the dust, and gnashed their teeth and howled. The wild birds shrieked and terrified did flutter on the ground, and flap their useless wings. The wildest brutes came tame and tremulous, and vipers crawled and twined themselves around the multitude, hissing but stingless. They were slain for food. And war, which for a moment was no more, did glut himself again. A meal was bought with blood, and each sate sullenly apart, gorging himself in gloom. No love was left. All earth was but one thought, and that was death, immediate and inglorious, and the pang of famine fed upon all entrails. Men died, and their bones were tombless as their flesh. The meager by the meager were devoured. Even dogs assailed their masters, all save one. And he was faithful to a course, and kept the birds and beasts and famished men at bay, till hunger clung them, or the dropping dead lured their lank jaws, himself sought out no food. But with a piteous and perpetual moan, and a quick, desolate cry, licking the hand which answered not with a caress, he died. The crowd was famished by degrees, but two of an enormous city did survive, and they were enemies. They met beside the dying embers of an altar place, where had been heaped a mass of holy things for an unholy usage. They raked up, and shivering scraped with their cold skeleton hands the feeble ashes, and their feeble breath blew for a little life and made a flame which was a mockery. Then they lifted up their eyes as it grew lighter, and beheld each other's aspects, saw and shrieked and died. Even of their mutual hideousness they died, unknowingly who was upon whose brow famine had written fiend. The world was void, the populous and the powerful was a lump, seasonless, herbless, treeless, manless, lifeless, a lump of death, a chaos of hard clay. The rivers, lakes, and ocean all stood still, and nothing stirred within their silent depths. Ships sailorless lay rotting on the sea, and their masts fell down piecemeal as they dropped. They slept on the abyss without a surge. The waves were dead. The tides were in their grave. The moon, their mistress, had expired before. The winds were withered in the stagnant air, and the clouds perished. Darkness had no need of aid from them. She was the universe. You're listening to CICK 93.9 Smithers Community Radio. My name's Gavin Smith, and this is The Underword. We're broadcasting from the unceded Gitumden Clan territory, Cassia House, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. And you were just listening to a very long, I didn't actually realize it was going to be that long when I started. Sometimes when it's online, you're like, wow, that is a lot longer when you read it out loud. But you were listening to Darkness by Lord Byron. And if you haven't listened to the show before, the Underword looks for where the old poets turn up in the new music, and this episode is on George Gordon Byron, better known as Lord Byron. I'll tell you a little bit about him before we jump in. He was born in 1788 in London, and at the age of 10, he became the 6th Baron Byron of Rochdale and inherited the ancestral home, Newstead Abbey in Nottinghamshire, which just goes to show that the meritocracy is alive and well. I'm sure he worked very hard for that lordship at the age of 10. And as a young man, he racked up very extensive debts while engaging in boxing, horse racing, gambling, and sexual escapades. He then spent several years traveling Portugal, Spain, Malta, Albania, and Greece. And after that, he returned to England, where the publication of some of his works made him a celebrity. He effectively became the rock star of his day. Byron both wrote about and became known as a prime example of what's been called the Byronic hero, which, according to Wikipedia, the source of all knowledge, says the Byronic hero presents an idealized but flawed character whose attributes include great talent, great passion, a distaste for society and social institutions, a lack of respect for rank and privilege, although possessing both, being thwarted in love by social constraint or death, rebellion, exile, an unsavory secret past, arrogance, overconfidence, or the lack of foresight, and ultimately, a self-destructive manner. Which does indeed characterize Lord Byron's life. He, after returning to England, had a one-year marriage, during which time he had a child, after which his wife left him for his frequent affairs and called him insane. In the social fallout of that, which was quite significant in the time, he left England in 1816, never to return. He spent 8 years bouncing around Europe, and in the last year of his life, he accepted an offer to join the Greek War of Independence, as you do, which was against the Ottoman Empire. And in 1824, in Missolonghi, Greece, he died by fever, exacerbated by therapeutic bleeding, insisted upon by his doctors. He was only 36. So we're going to jump right into the music now. With this is a bit of a repeat offender on the show, which would be David Bowie. Not the first time we have played him, and probably not the last. There are a bunch of articles comparing Bowie to Lord Byron because of the role of their eccentric and sort of fluid personalities in shaping their art, and the almost cult-like following their personalities inspired in their time, including, I would add, some academic gems, like the journal article entitled, quote, "Sometimes I feel like the whole human race, Lord Byron and David Bowie, consider the question of identity." But Bowie himself assumed the persona of Lord Byron, which is why we're going to cover him. And he assumed the persona of Lord Byron in his music video for the single Blue Jean, which won a Grammy in 1985 for Best Video Short Form, which later became Best Music Video. And this was actually Bowie's only competitive Grammy Award during his lifetime. And jazz, according, again, to Wikipedia, I'm digging deep in my research this week. But according to Wikipedia, Jazzin' for Blue Jean was shot in August 1984 and features Bowie in dual roles as Vic, a man with his eye on a girl, and as Screaming Lord Byron, a flamboyant rock star whose forthcoming gig provides the man with a date. Bowie performs Blue Jean as Byron towards the end of the film, and a shorter music video for Blue Jean was shot a few days later. The film depicts the adventures of the socially incompetent Vic, played by Bowie, as he tries to win the affections of a beautiful girl by claiming to personally know her favorite rock star, which would be Screaming Lord Byron, also played by Bowie. Rightfully disbelieving him, she challenges Vic to introduce her to him. They make a date for a Screaming Lord Byron show where Vic attempts to sneak backstage to convince a cowering, paranoid Mr. Screaming to come say hello to him and the girl after the show. Screaming Lord Byron does come to Vic's table after the show and says hello to him and the girl, but the girl and Screaming Lord Byron have already met in Peru, of course, and she leaves with the rock star instead of Vic. As they drive off, Bowie breaks the fourth wall and asks the director why the story changed from his concept. So that was a bit of a description of the music video itself. Here's the song. This is David Bowie with his single Blue Jean.
Blue Jean, I just made a call. is heavenly sweeter than your dream. She got a police bike, she got a turned up nose. Sometimes I feel like there's a cruelty.
So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night, though the heart be still as loving and the moon be still as bright. For the sword outwears its sheath, and the soul wears out the breast, and the heart must pause to breathe and love itself have rest. Though the night was made for loving and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon. That was Lord Byron with We'll Go No More A-Roving, and before that you were listening to David Bowie, his single Blue Jean from the 1984 release Tonight, with a very 1980s, kind of out of nowhere, sax solo in the middle of it. We're going to turn now to a triple header of songs based on that poem that you just heard, which was We'll Go No More A-Roving, which has captured the imagination of a lot of modern musicians. I think I might just jump right into the set and we can talk about it later. So if you're ready for it, here we go. We're going to start with Chris Delmhorst, and this is, you guessed it, it is We'll Go No More A-Roving.
So we'll go no more roving so late into the night, though the heart be still as loving, the moon be still as bright, though the sword outwears the sheath, dear. Soul wears out the breast, And the heart must pause to breathe deep and love itself at rest.
Chris Delmhorst. Next up, Joan Baez. We'll Go No More Roving.
Must pause to breathe and love itself.
You were just listening to a set of three songs, very different, but all with the exact same lyrics. And those lyrics are the poem "We'll Go No More Roving" by Lord Byron. I actually really enjoyed, it's kind of interesting to just hear totally different musical takes on what are the exact same words. I particularly like the really insanely high Joan Baez version, followed immediately by Leonard Cohen's sort of subsonic version. So that was, you were listening to, first of all, Chris Delmhorst, who's an American contemporary singer-songwriter, who took a take on "We'll Go No More Roving." After that was, of course, prolific folk icon Joan Baez, who has released over 30 albums over six decades, beginning in the counterculture years, the 1960s, where that song was from. That was from the album Five in 1964. And then finally, the one, the only, Leonard Cohen with "We'll Go No More Roving" from his 2004 release, Dear Heather. And for the next reading, I'm actually going to turn it over to another icon of the 1960s, and that is the late English singer-songwriter and actor, Marianne Faithfull. And she, after the 60s, continued producing music, and in 2021, she released her final album before she passed a few years later, and that album was entitled She Walks in Beauty, which is, that title is based on the Lord Byron poem of the same name. And the album consists of a series of famous poems set to music and read by Faithfull. So rather than read you Lord Byron's poem, I'm going to leave that job to Marianne Faithfull herself. This is Marianne Faithfull and Warren Ellis with She Walks in Beauty. Kind of starts off, imagine you're like in a spa. Yeah.
She walks in beauty like the night of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes, thus mellowed to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies. One shade the more, one ray the less, had half impaired the nameless grace which waves in every raven tress, or softly lightens o'er her face, where thoughts serenely sweet express how pure, how dear their dwelling place. And on that cheek and o'er that brow, so soft, so calm, yet eloquent, the smiles that win, the tints that glow, but tell of days in goodness spent. A mind at peace with all below, a heart whose love is innocent.
That was Lord Byron's She Walks in Beauty, read by Marianne Faithfull, to the music of Marianne Faithfull and Warren Ellis. And that phrase, She Walks in Beauty, I feel like it got incorporated into like new aginess generally. I feel like I didn't actually realize it was a Lord Byron thing. I just associate it with new age-ity. And it has appeared in a variety of songs, actually. The one I'm going to play next is my favorite of those. It's actually a very recent release from Australian bedroom pop artist Hag, who was new to me. The song is also called She Walks in Beauty, and it finishes sort of in the background with a bit of a reading of Byron's poem, kind of a like an old-timey voice, I guess you would say. So this is Australian artist Hag from their 2026 release, Gap Creek Falls, with She Walks in Beauty. You've been listening to The Underword on CICK 93.9 Smithers Community Radio. Thanks to our sponsor, Bugwood Bean. My name is Gavin Smith, signing off for the night. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.